TheDigitalLifestyle.com presents The Media Centre Show, show 137, Thursday, January 3rd, 2008. Show tech.co.uk. I'm Ian Dixon, and welcome to the first show of 2008. Hope you had a great Christmas and a great new year, and you're ready for the year ahead. And of course, January means CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, so I'm flying out to Las Vegas on Sunday. I have lots of interviews planned for there. I'm really looking forward to seeing new extenders, and hopefully we'll see some new stuff announced. You never know. If you're going to CES, there's still a chance for you to catch up with me. Email Ian at thedigitallifestyle.com and we'll try and work something out. And if there's anything particular you think I should be looking at, let me know. And I'll try and fit that in with the schedule. This week on the show is Jason Dunn from ZuneThoughts.com. Jason's returning to the show to talk to me about the new Zunes and the new Zune software. The Zune seemed very popular gift over Christmas, so we're going to be talking about the new devices and the software and how it fits in with Media Center and the digital lifestyle. So first I want to mention extenders. I think there's going to be some new details coming out on the extenders at CES. So I'll have more information on that while I'm there. I know Microsoft are going to be increasing their marketing campaigns explaining the benefits of Windows Media Center extenders. So far the marketing extenders has been pretty low key, but I think at CES they're going to announce some big initiatives on marketing and raising their profiles. I know they're going to be advertising extenders in numerous places on the web, and I think they'll even be adding a tile within Media Center to promote the extenders, which I think is a good idea, and promote the benefits of extenders. Some of the details I did find out is that D-Link's DSM 750 will support XP via their own Media Lounge software, which means so if you're using Vista, one of the 750s, you'll get full Media Center experience. But if you're using XP, then you can use their Media Lounge software to get a similar experience, and then when you do go to Vista, you'll have the full Media Center experience, which I think is a good idea and a good way of bridging the gap between the two platforms. Sadly, I couldn't get any availability of UK release dates on this, but they did kind of hint that maybe there'll be some 50Hz support. We'll have to wait and see. HP MediaSmart's TV with 1080p is going to have Media Center functionality built into it, built-in wireless, and again, no news on European rollout plans. Linksys said they will be releasing their models in the UK, which is great news, and hopefully I'll have an interview with Linksys at CES. But they're also said to be supporting 50Hz output for HD content for the UK and for European models, which is great news. I know we've had a lot of comments into the show about the Xbox 360 not supporting 50Hz output, and it looks a bit sort of juddery when you see some stuff, some recorded TV stuff. So hopefully Linksys device will be at 50Hz, and like I said, we'll get more details from Linksys when I see them at CES. Edbot got his extender, and he posted his first impressions, and it looks extremely positive actually. He liked things like the startup time and the quietness. I got the Disless DMA 2100, which looks very small and neat, and I'm looking forward to seeing those. Ed mentioned it takes 10 to 12 seconds to go from a cold start to the Media Center interface, which compared to the 360 is pretty good as well. I also mentioned that it's pretty fast. So I'm looking forward to seeing those, and finally the extenders are here. On a related note to that, a reader sent me a link to Zitro's latest Helios LCD TV, and what's mentioned on there is it says it's got a wireless Media Center, it's got a built-in wireless Media Center, and there's a flash demo on the website showing their TV displaying the Media Center interface via its wireless connection. And I don't think it's a Windows Media Center extender because it doesn't have the official logos on it. So I'm not sure it's the same as HP's MediaSmart TVs with the built-in extender technology. But obviously there is something going on there. Now, whether it's some kind of wireless video sending or something like that, have a look at the link in the show notes, and hopefully we'll get some more information of that. Chris Lanny had an interesting post just before Christmas about sort of a glimmer of hope that satellite may be coming to Media Center. He found a couple of jobs on Microsoft's jobs website indicating that they need someone to work on satellite implementation on Media Center, and he was kind of hoping it was Sky and DirecTV. I'm not so sure. I still think Sky will like to keep their platform nice and closed, but I know some of the German satellites are open enough to be able to implement on Media Center, and then there's the European FreeSat project. So I'm hoping there is Sky compatibility with Media Center in the future. I'm not holding my breath, but some of the other satellite operators would be interesting if they're supporting Media Center. Last week I put out a video on the DigitalLifestyle.com video show, and this video looked at 10 Foot Media's latest Media Center system. Now, 10 Foot Media were on the show a couple of weeks ago, and they sent me a review model, which is a nice sort of AV component looking device, and I connected it up to my Sony TV and my Denon AV receiver. So I had a look at inside and outside the unit, tried it with some HD content. So have a look at the video, and a link for that in the show notes. And finally, I want to mention I'll give you an update on my Media Center Health Monitor program. The website's been updated, so kind of an Ajax front end now. There's RSS feeds, so status your system and events, so you can subscribe to those feeds and then use your feed reader to see the status, so you can see whether it's a healthy status or there's warnings. And you can also see whether each individual event that's coming through from the monitor program, you can get those subscribed in the sidebar. So on, say, your laptop, you can see the events, that kind of thing. So I'm going to be adding more features, including hopefully Windows Live Alerts, more after CES. I'm going to be not doing much on that while I'm away. If you've got any suggestions, comments, you can send those in, ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. If you want to sign up for the beta, it's health.thedigitallifestyle.com, and then you can create your account on there and have a play with it. I'm really looking for feedback on the web interface, so I'd really love you to try it out. And I also wanted to mention Media Center Show Awards. The voting for that is now closed. I'm going to be reviewing the winners while away at CES, and there'll be an announcement on the award show in a couple of weeks. Okay, now it's time for a message from One Voice. I'll be back with Jason Dunn.
Introducing Media Center Communicator, the perfect complement for Windows Media Center. Imagine walking into your home and simply speaking to play music, watch TV, read and send email, call to order pizza, and more. Now with Media Center Communicator, you have full control of your digital home using only your voice. And best of all, there is no voice training required. And built on OneVoice's Media Center Communicator, MCEach Speech Tools is a powerful speech recognition toolkit allowing developers of Media Center compatible applications to easily incorporate speech recognition commands as features. OneVoice offers licenses for MCE Speech Tools along with its Media Center Communicator to the rapidly growing community of Media Center developers. Just say it to play it. To learn more, go to www.onev.com.
Jason Dunn, welcome back to the Media Center Show.
Thanks, Ian. Glad to be here.
And we're going to be talking Zooms today. And for anybody that doesn't know, you run ZoomThoughts.com and DigitalMediaThoughts.com and PocketPCThoughts.com. Have I missed any out?
SmartphoneThoughts.com.
So, I mean, there are a great range of websites and some great communities around those products. And you've been on the show previously talking about Zoom, and there's quite a bit of Zoom news out last month, and I thought Zoom would be something that listeners would be interested to. So welcome back to the show.
Thanks. Yeah, it's definitely been an interesting kind of past 30 days or so for the Zoom, especially after what felt like a very long wait, you know, since the first generation Zoom came out. They released it, and then nothing happened, which was sort of a story unto itself.
Yeah, because last time you were on, we were kind of speculating about new Zooms, but there was no information out at all.
Yeah, I mean that's one of the interesting things, right? With the first generation Zunes, you know, they released the product, and pretty much everyone thought that the product was rather rushed to market, and we were sort of expecting, you know, regular firmware updates and sort of a rapid kind of cycle of improvements for the first generation Zunes. But it was really bizarre to see that really the only update that they really truly released for the Zune in the whole first year was really a fix for making Shuffle work better. You know, we all wanted, you know, better wireless sharing and new features, and they really didn't release anything. And I think we can all see why, because they were working really hard on the second generation Zune products, and they kind of made it up to the first generation Zune owners by letting their Zunes be upgraded.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was a good decision, that, because it didn't penalize the early adopters, and it actually sort of, when I heard that they were going to release the firmware for version 1, I ended up sort of getting hold of a Zune because I knew that it was going to be upgraded to the version 2 stuff and not obsolete.
Yeah, it was really interesting to see how that whole thing played out. I mean, other than, you know, minor firmware updates in terms of other MP3 player companies out there, Apple, Creative, you know, take your pick, SanDisk, for Microsoft to come out and release an update that actually gave you essentially all the same features was just fantastic. And just as we saw in your case, there were people that actually went out and bought the first generation Zunes because, of course, after a year they were, you know, being discounted, so you could pick up, you know, the first gen Zune for $100-$150 US, slapped a firmware on it, and you essentially have something that's just really a little bit thicker and has less storage than something like the Zune 80.
Mm. I mean, I've been really pleased with my Zune, but before we go back into sort of my experiences, just sort of explain then, what's new with Zune? I mean, the software, firmware, and, you know, devices, so just take us through what's new.
Yeah, I mean, the shortest way to say what's new is just to sort of say, you know, everything. In a lot of ways, this second generation Zune release is really what we were all hoping for with the first generation release. So, you know, for those that don't know, the first generation Zune, you know, the desktop software was really just kind of almost a bastardized version of Windows Media Player 11. They took the, you know, the beta code for back when Windows Media Player 11 was still in beta. They took that code and they, you know, slapped a new, you know, skin on it and sort of called it their software. It didn't have the same features or the same functions, but it worked kind of the same. And with the Zune hardware on the Zune 30, that was an off-the-shelf reference model from Toshiba. You know, so they basically went to Toshiba and said, "We want to build an MP3 player. You know, can you tell us, you know, what do you have to offer?" And they just sort of said, "Here." So it was really, in some ways, it was almost like just reheated, you know, parts. You had software that was old that they or rather that was new, but they just sort of put a new user interface on it, and the same thing with the hardware. With the second generation Zunes, it was really from the ground up. I mean, the software is radically different than anything else. You can tell that it's new software because it actually is missing a whole bunch of important features, which we can talk about later. But new software design, everything from the ground up, and the new hardware is also, you know, radically, radically different than the first generation hardware.
So tell us about the hardware first. So what improvements have they made to that?
Well, I mean, the biggest change, of course, is the fact that they have a flash-based Zune. So now you can get a Zune 4 or a Zune 8, which is a 4 gigabyte or an 8 gigabyte version of the Zune. Much smaller, much thinner. It looks a lot like last year's iPod Nano. It's a lot thinner than the Zune, and this was really the model that, of course, everyone wanted Microsoft to have, because generally speaking, the bulk of the market purchases flash-based Zunes. You know, not everyone needs, you know, 60, 80, 100 gig hard drive in their MP3 player. And so this was the model that everyone wanted Microsoft to have out last year. Now it's finally here, and it's a lot. It's thinner. The screen on it is fantastic. It has a 1.8-inch screen, but the resolution is 320 by 240. And not to get too technical, but, you know, the number of pixels on the size of a screen gives you a PPI value, a pixels per inch. And the higher the PPI value, the crisper the text looks. Everything just really jumps off the screen. And the screen on this thing, I calculated out, has a PPI of about, I think, 255, which is actually higher than the iPhone, which has one of the, you know, most heralded screens out there in terms of clarity. So the Zune 4 and 8 have just a fantastic screen. There's the Zune Pad, Which is essentially, it's a squircle, so it's actually a square with rounded edges, and it's now touch-based. So you can still click up and down, left and right, but if you want to, you can actually sweep your finger over the Zune pad. So if you're scrolling through a long list of songs, you can actually just sweep your finger in short sweeps to go just a little bit, or you can do a long sweep and it'll sort of scroll down. You really have to kind of use it to see it, but it's a really interesting innovation, and it really makes the Zune a lot more fun to use and easier.
So when you're going through sort of your lists, say of albums on the Zune 30, I'm clicking down. If I want to go to say a group, you know, begin with V, and I've got to keep pressing click, 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 click. But with this, you can sort of accelerate the list by sort of sliding your finger down.
Yeah, exactly. It's similar to some of the other touch-based devices out there, some Windows Mobile devices, or even, you know, like the iPhone, where you or the iPod Touch, where you want to get down, you just sort of sweep your finger, you know, down. If you want to get down to the bottom quicker, you can sweep it quicker, and it's quite sensitive, but it's not. I mean, I personally have always had a bit of a problem using the iPod wheel because it's kind of spastic. You know, you sort of have to get used to using it. I mean, any long-time iPod user will probably think I'm an idiot. And they say, oh, no, the wheel's really easy to use. But, you know, if most people think back to the very first time they tried to use the wheel, it does take a bit of, you know, practice at dexterity to actually get it to work properly.
Mm-hmm. But that's one of the nice things about the new Zunes. I saw that... that sort of way of interacting. I guess that's a way of Microsoft getting around any sort of patents that Apple have got with the wheel, but it's an innovative design.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think you know, touch makes a lot of sense with the sweeping motion, especially again as you it might not be a big deal if you have, you know, the Zune 4 and you've only got, you know, 30 or 40 albums on there, but if you have an 80 gigabyte Zune, you've loaded up 300 or 400 albums, you don't want to sit there and kind of, you know, click and hold down. Although with the Zune, if you click and hold down, and I think this should be the same on the Zune 30, if you click and hold, it should eventually give you the letter jump, so you'd be able to switch sort of by the letter. So that was one thing that Microsoft did to make it a bit easier, but certainly using touch to navigate is a lot more intuitive. But again, the cool thing is, and again, this is something that I don't think Apple would ever do, Microsoft gives you the ability to turn it off. So if you don't like the touch and you just kind of want to go back to the click wheel approach, you can go into options and actually just toggle it off.
Oh, that's a good idea. So it gives you both options.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And the other thing, I guess with the Zune 80, that's a lot, or from the pictures I've seen in the videos that you did, that looks a lot slimmer than the Zune 30.
Oh yeah, it is quite a bit slimmer. Unfortunately, I don't have the numbers right in front of me here, but I would easily say it's probably 30%, you know, thinner, 25 to 30% thinner. It still has a nice good feel in the hands, which is something that the first generation Zune had as well. I mean, a lot of people thought it was a bit big, but it felt quite comfortable in the hand. The new Zune 80 is thinner. It has a screen that is 0.2 inches bigger. But it still has that nice feel in the hand, and it's also quite durable. I took my Zune over to Europe, both of them, and back again. I've had them for a little bit over a month, and nary a scratch or a scuff or anything, and that's not something that most iPod users can say. So
yeah, I mean, one thing I found when I got the Zune, aside from the sort of the nice packaging, which is a bit of a departure from Microsoft, it felt nice. It feels like a quality device and not sort of a cheap MP3 player.
Yeah, the fit and finish on the first generation Zunes, and indeed on the second generation Zunes, is really top notch. I mean, you mentioned the packaging. When you're unboxing the Zune, you just have a real sense of kind of quality. It's not in, you know, like a plastic blister pack, which is kind of interesting because Apple, of course, used to have this great out of box experience, but as Apple has come to, you know, dominate the MP3 player market, their products are now sold in, you know, like little sort of cheap plastic boxes, and you just you get the feeling that, you know, you're buying a pack of gum, you know, rather than a $300 MP3 player. Whereas the Zune, it just has a visceral feeling, you know, when you're using the device, and the fit and finish. I mean, I do kind of miss that sort of rubberized plastic on the original Zune that had, you know, the double shot, and it definitely had an interesting look. The new Zunes, though, are are great looking. Maybe we should actually talk about Zune Originals, although only your listeners in the United States will be able to access even the website. If you go to ZuneOriginals.net for you and I, Ian, we'll actually get a page that says that we can't even look at the website.
Yeah, I saw that. I mean, I mean, we'll come back to the sort of the social elements, which don't work for us either. But the Zune Originals, you can't even have a look at what you're missing.
Yeah, I don't know why Microsoft was the Zune team was so cruel to its international users. I mean, even if we couldn't order one, you know, we should still be able to look at it. I find that actually rather ridiculous. But at any rate, my point was with that is that you know, users can go to Zune Originals and get custom Zune 4.8s and now the Zune 80, which just came out about a week ago, Zune Originals, and for the same price as retail, they can actually get these fantastic etched artwork on the back, or you can write in text and get a bit like a tattoo and mix it with some text, and they're just beautiful designs. Unfortunately, I haven't seen one in person, but the designs just look fantastic. Microsoft got in touch with some of the greatest new kind of generation of pop artists, and just amazing designs.
That's an interesting idea, and it's something a bit different from the rest of the players on the market.
Yeah, it is. I think it really speaks to the fact that the Zune team, they're really music lovers and art lovers, and I mean, you know, like when I went down to visit them, I guess just about a year ago now, right prior to the first generation launch. When I went into their offices, I mean, again, this is an offshoot of the Xbox team. A lot of the Zune guys are ex-Xbox 360 team members. It's all being run by Jay Allard. You walked around these offices, and there were, DJ turntables and headphones and LPs, and there's a culture of music lovers there. And I think that really is apparent in the product. Whereas if you look at something like a SanDisk player or, an iPod, you don't really see that. I mean, you do see some excellence in technology, but you don't really see the love of music. And I think that's something that the Zune team is really, really pouring into their products.
I mean, it's kind of like there's a reverse situation between the Zune and the iPod as there is with Windows and Mac, and that, you know, everyone's got an iPod, and if you've got a Zune, it's a bit different, and perhaps with the originals as well, it shows you're a bit more original than sort of in the crowd that have got iPods, and it's almost the flip round to the Windows Mac debate.
Yeah, it's honestly, it's been absolutely, I'm sort of an amateur, psychology and sociology student. I always find it fascinating the way people think and the things that they say. And when I published all those Zune videos up on YouTube, it was amazing to see a lot of the comments. You know, you could tell by the syntax and the grammar that a lot of the people writing were, I would say under the age of 18, young people. And it was really, really interesting to see their comments, because a lot of them were saying, the iPod is, old and busted. The Zune is the new hotness. The Zune is cool. The iPod. Everyone has an iPod. I don't want an iPod. I want the Zune because it's new and different and cool. And for a Microsoft product to get that kind of impact is pretty much unheard of. I mean, even the Xbox didn't necessarily get that kind of impression, although certainly the 360 is, an amazing product. I think a lot of people went for the 360 because they didn't want to get, the PS3 or whatever, but that's a whole different topic.
Yeah, and talk about the firmware then, because I noticed as soon as I fired up, the new version, that looks a lot different, and of course the podcasting features is something that I was really pleased to see.
Yeah, definitely. I'm not much of a podcaster myself, so I have to admit that wasn't a feature that I was really missing. But it was intriguing that when I, you plug in the Zune, and now podcasting is a top level menu item. And what's fascinating, of course, is that podcasting really took off, primarily because of the iPod. It was the dominant player, and that's obviously how it got the name podcasting. But what's fascinating is the reaction of podcasters. So many of them are extremely pro Zune because podcasting has a top level placement on the Zune. So when you fire up the new Zune, you have music, video, pictures, social, radio, and podcasts. And rather than putting podcasts underneath another menu. Like, and again, I don't own an iPod, so I can't speak with complete authority, but my understanding is that audio podcasts essentially go under music, and video podcasts go under videos. And so then if you're listening to, you know, all of your music on random, you'll actually get your audio podcasts mixed in unless you're doing an actual playlist. Whereas the Zune, it's a, you know, it's sort of a different sandbox. Microsoft is acknowledging that music is music and podcasts are podcasts. And I think for a lot of podcasters that an elevation of status is something that is really appealing to them. And of course, this is a complete, you know, reversal from the first generation Zune, where podcasting wasn't in the mix at all and all the podcasters got upset. And I'll definitely give them credit, the fact that Microsoft is giving them more than Apple. I think a lot of them are actually noticing that and they're quite appreciative.
Absolutely. I mean, I find I listen to a lot of shows and two clicks and you're in there, you know, you power, switch it on, go to podcast, pick your show and you're away. And it's got things like Resume, which is great, and listeners to this show might appreciate that, because this is a long format show, you know, half an hour. You don't always get to listen to it in one go, so just be able to come back to it at later time and pick it up and just carry on is something that's absolute sort of vital for a podcast listener. So I was really pleased to see that.
Yeah, you know, definitely with Microsoft leaving out podcasting support the first time around, I think, you know, rightfully so, they got hammered because it was a feature that a lot of people had wanted to see. But, you know, you got to give credit where credit is due. Their implementation is fantastic. It's a really solid implementation. On the desktop software, the podcasting directory is very visual. It's really easy to use. And again, this is coming from a guy that literally, I don't think I'd ever really subscribed to a podcast in my life. I had downloaded them. I had listened to some of them online, but I would just, you know, click on the MP3 and kind of download it. Because I don't have, you know, a commute, I work from home, I've never really been into podcasting, but I did when I was about to leave my trip for Europe. I connected my Zune 80 and I downloaded, you know, some interesting video podcasts, and I really quite enjoyed, you know, watching a lot of the videos on the plane, so it was great.
Yeah, the software on the desktop is really good for podcasters, and you know, it's just the one-click option, which you can just put a link on your website and you can subscribe to the show that way, and it works really good. And the whole synchronization thing just works brilliantly for me, and it's been it's made me able to listen to more shows because you can manage what you've listened to and what you've not.
Yeah, I mean the desktop software is really interesting and probably something that we should kind of delve into. I mean, for those that don't know, they can go to Zune.net and actually download the software, and you don't need a Zune to actually use it. I mean, if you want to use the software to manage your music or to watch, you know, your videos or manage your podcasts, you can actually just use the software without requiring a Zune, which is cool. And the software is really interesting because when you use it, it's really interesting. I read a comment somewhere that said that iTunes compared to the Zune software was like using a spreadsheet. I mean, it's a really, really boring interface. And I mean, it works and it's simple, but it really does look like a spreadsheet. It's not fun to use. I mean, I personally, my wife owns an iPod, which I was a little bit ashamed at buying, to be honest with you, because I've been rather anti-iPod for years. But she wanted a Shuffle. You know, she goes and works out at the gym every morning, and there was really at the time nothing like the Shuffle on the market, and I'm talking about the second generation generation Shuffle. At any rate, iTunes, I just hate the software, and largely because it doesn't do something that I think every software should do. It doesn't monitor folders for new music. The assumption is, Apple makes the assumption, of course this is what Apple does, they make the assumption that you're going to use iTunes to rip your CDs, because why on earth would you possibly use anything other than an Apple product? Well, I use a particular CD ripping program that does a lot of error correction, and it makes me 100% sure that I have a perfect rip. You know, it takes a bit longer and it was a bit more complicated to set up, but it gives me a perfect rip, whereas iTunes doesn't actually do that. And iTunes doesn't allow you to monitor folders, so if I'm ripping with this other program, I can't point iTunes at my music directory and say, hey, you know, just look here for new music. So it's a big pain to use. But the Zune software is just fantastic. It's a really, really interesting user interface, but it wouldn't be fair to praise it and not actually talk about the problems. So have you run into any problems with the Zune software not picking up your music properly or giving you, you know, mismatched content or album art?
Yeah, a couple of problems with album art, and I did have a problem with the folder that it wouldn't add into the player, and it just wouldn't play. You tried to play the file, but it worked fine in Media Center and in Media Player, but not directly in Zoom. But I re-ripped the CD and then it worked. So I guess there was some kind of protection or something going awry there.
Yeah, so it's really fascinating. I mean, it's interesting, right? The Zune software it looks just amazing. It looks fantastic. When I first loaded it up, I was in awe because I was convinced that this, you know, how could Microsoft create software like this? I mean, it just looks really cool. You know, it's really fun to use. But once I started to use it a bit more and I started to look at my music collection, I was baffled at some of the ways that it was reading the metadata, you know. And so the typical problem with a lot of users is you'll be looking at an album and it'll have the wrong album art, so it'll have the wrong picture for the album. And then you'll be looking at the album, the contents, and it'll have completely the wrong contents, you know. So I have an album, like a Rascal Flatts single, or a country band, and mixed in with that album, even though it's only a single, I have, you know, Nazareth and all this other, you know, like 70s music, and it's completely illogical. And I looked at the same songs using Windows Media Player and also Media Monkey, which is my preferred tool for manipulating metadata, and the contents were fine. And so I'm completely baffled as to why it's happening. The biggest clue I've had is that somebody was talking about different versions of ID3 tags with UDF8 encoding. I barely even know what that means, but I'm going to try to see if I can figure it out to see if it'll fix my problem. But there are definitely a lot of 1.0 issues with this software, and I really desperately hope that Microsoft is going to put some effort into improving it.
Yeah, one of the things I found was that I had on my laptop a CD that had no cover art, so I went through the Zune software and added the cover art, and then on my main machine, my main Media Center PC, where all the content is automatically synced from, the laptop is just kind of a guest situation. I copied that music back from the Zune back onto the Media Center PC, and then it removed all the album art then for anything that had sort of been ripped backwards onto the Media Center PC, and I guess it didn't recognise that I'd added it through the Zune software. So then I had to add the album art again, but on the main PC rather than on the laptop.
Yeah, so Microsoft still has some work to do there in terms of getting this all to play together nicely. I mean, you'd mentioned that you'd added the album art using the Zune software, but of course what's interesting there is that you can't, if you right-click on an album that's missing album art, you can add the JPEG if you already have it, but you can't actually do an album lookup in the same way that you could do an album lookup with Windows Media Player.
Yeah.
And so that's one of those features that, you know, you kind of got to wonder, okay, Microsoft, you know, what exactly were you guys thinking? I think part of it is just, you know, the software was maybe a little bit rushed, but I'm desperately hoping that they'll be improving it. One of my pet peeves is that if you look at videos or pictures, you know, I'm really into videos and my photos. The way they've sort of arranged it is just doesn't really make much sense. I mean, if you go, you know, if you let it scan your pictures folder, and that's what, of course, 98% of people are going to do. They're either going to have their My Pictures folder on XP, or they're going to have their pictures folders on Vista. And of course, you point the software at it, you let it scan all your pictures. What would be a helpful view would probably be either like a category view, or maybe a flattened, you know, date view. So maybe it would work like Picasa, where the pictures up at the top would be your most recent pictures. And to me, that would be intuitive, because then you'd be able to say, oh yeah, well, you know, I just went on vacation and I want to grab those pictures and drag and drop it onto my Zune. But they don't do that. When you click on pictures, all you see is the pictures folder. And then you have to double click on that and go down, and then you'll start to see your categories. But I mean, if you want to access, you know, your most recent, you know, your vacation photos, for me at least, you know, I have to click down like two or three levels to kind of get at it. And I can't imagine what the Microsoft software people were thinking when they thought that's what people wanted to do. I mean, to me, it just makes sense to show people their latest and greatest pictures, because most people think in terms of, you know, well, how long ago did I take those pictures? And it's the same thing with video. Video gives you, you know, an A to Z list or a date added list, but it's the date added to the software, not the date that the actual recording was made or the date that the file was there. So when you first import all your video, the date sort doesn't make any sense because, of course, everything is based on, you know, 5 seconds ago when it was actually imported. So there's just all these really confusing things that I think Microsoft desperately needs to work on. And their response is usually, well, we want to, you know, just work on the music experience. But, you know, the reality is if you're going to let people manage their pictures and their videos and you're going to have a nice big screen on the bigger Zune, you really need to put some effort into these other areas.
Mm. And looking at the Windows the software that they've got for it, I noticed a couple of little things sort of poking around. It seems to be more .NET framework based, and they're using the SQL compact database, so that there's no more. I think they probably get rid of the old Windows Media Player style data access databases that were sort of prone to corruptions. It looks like they've built it on a more modern platform, so I guess they've started from a clean sheet and they've got the basics going, and they're going to have to add these features over time.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't actually know that about the SQL. You're much more technical than I am in that regard, but it certainly does make a lot of sense because if you look at the overall performance of the software, when you add something to one of the folders that it is monitoring, in every case that I've seen, it take like in under 2 seconds, you will see that content appear in the Zune software. Whereas in Windows Media Player, you'd add new content and you'd kind of just have to wait. You know, maybe you'd go out and, you know, force it to do a refresh, but typically, you know, it would take, you know, 30 minutes or something before that content would actually show up. So the Zune software is much better at actually adding that content. One of the things that they did take out though was the sort of smart playlist functionality. So I'm curious, did you use the smart playlist functionality in the original Zune software or in Windows Media Player with any of your players?
No, I didn't actually, but partly because I only had the Zune a fairly short time before I got onto the new software anyway, so I've not had time to miss it. And to be honest, I used to be very much an album guy where I'd listen to everything straight through as an album, and it's only really since getting the Zune that I've got more into playlists and things, so it's not something that I've sort of really missed because I didn't use it before.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. I would say that I was similar. One of the big problems with the first generation Zune software and indeed Windows Media Player 11 is that their auto playlist kind of functionality, it was just hard to figure out. I mean, I'm a fairly technical guy and I would just kind of rack my brains, you know, going through their sort of, you know, Boolean if then operators and trying to figure out, you know, okay, so, you know, give me music that has been added within the last, you know, 30 days or 60 days, or give me pictures within the last 30 days. Once I did figure it out, it was great because when I would dock my Zune, I would get, you know, the last, you know, kind of 90 days of music, all the CDs that I had ripped, you know, or purchased, and I would get all of my pictures. And I mean, to me, that is what a digital, you know, media device should do. It should give you as a consumer access to all of your recent content. You shouldn't have to think about dragging and dropping, you know, if you don't want to. So I was desperately hoping that they were going to improve that functionality in the second generation Zune because while the basic functionality was there, it was way too hard to use. I mean, I was baffled as to why when you were setting up the Zune software, there wasn't just an option that said, you know, hey, you know, would you like us to put, you know, your last 30 days of digital pictures on your Zune? Click yes, boom, you know, you have it done. So, but rather than improving it, they completely removed the feature from the second generation Zune software. Or I guess, to be more accurate, since it's a ground up rework, they didn't actually create that feature in the new software. So now I found myself in this particularly downgraded kind of experience where when I dock my Zune and I want to get my vacation pictures from Europe or whatever, I have to actually, you know, manually drag and drop everything. And that, of course, is just a very curious experience because to me that's a downgrade, and I'm desperately hoping that the Zune team is actually gonna put some effort in there.
Well, hopefully that. Now I think they've sort of got the version one product using the you know, the newer technology, the .NET framework and the SQL database. You know, that they've got a platform that they can work on now, and sort of not managing a sort of soup code from Windows Media Player beta, but they've actually got a clean platform to work on. So it's adding things like this is should be straightforward and not you know, not sort of adding kludges and fixes and things. That it's actually, you know, a clean platform for them to work on.
Yeah, I mean, and certainly that is my hope. I guess my fear though is, and I mean I frankly I think this is probably unfounded, but you know, thinking negatively, what of course we don't want to see is a repeat of last year where they release the product, you know, the hardware and the software, and they just sort of leave it out there, and they spend the next year working on the next generation, but they don't improve the current generation, you know, for the next kind of 12 months. So my sincere hope is that they will, you know, take on kind of an Xbox 360 approach where we'll have, you know, maybe quarterly updates or something of, you know, fairly significant new features, and, you know, over time they'll add things that they're missing. I mean, one thing right now with the new Zune is that they added support for WMA lossless, which a lot of, you know, hardcore music users really wanted. I mean, they're still missing FLAC support and a few of the other, you know, kind of lossless codecs. But one of the things that they still don't have in the new Zune is gapless playback. And for a lot of people, you know, hardcore music lovers that are listening to live albums or they're listening to, you know, DJ mixes, having pauses between the songs really ruins the whole experience.
Yeah.
So it's one of these bizarre things where Microsoft is saying, yeah, we're going after the music lovers, and the music lovers are saying, well, where's our gapless playback? So my hope is that within the next few months, we'll actually see new features like that being added. And my fear is that they're not going to do that. So go Zune team, you know, give us some new features.
Yeah, listening to Dark Side of the Moon with the gaps in it just isn't the same as listening to it
exactly.
all the way through. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
And have you tried the TV syncing, you know, by going into videos and getting your recorded TV onto the Zune?
Yeah, I have. It's been kind of a mixed bag, to be frank. I'm really, really happy that they added it in. I think it was unforgivable that they left it out of the first generation product, especially because Windows Media Player 11 can do it, you know. So you knew that the code was there, and there were, of course, some, you know, hacks floating around out there that people did, you know, registry hacks to allow the Zune software to, you know, import, you know, DivX files and things like that. So I'm really happy that they did add it into the second generation product, but it's a bit dodgy, to use a term that you'd be familiar with, Ian. I find that it's really hit and miss. Sometimes I will, you know, drag and drop a file, and a logical, you know, extent of that would be the transcoding would start at 1%, it would finish at 100%, and then it would transfer the file. Instead, you know, I'll see it go to 7%, and then it'll shoot to 100% done, and then it'll restart at 0. And I've just seen all this really sort of bizarre behavior. And then there's also bizarre behavior where I've seen the Zune software actually just yesterday. I started it up, and it started to transcode some TV shows that I didn't actually ask it to. So here I had the Zune software, you know, firing away, using up 100% of my CPU resources, transcoding something I didn't ask it to. And there's no way to actually see what it's doing.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way to see what it's transcoding, and there's no way to stop it other than, you know, exiting from the software and actually killing the encoding process. So I am happy that they've added it, but I definitely think that they really need to look at the scenarios and kind of work through it a little bit more and be a little bit smarter about how it works.
Right, and I noticed a couple of issues I have with it. First is that all the TV gets lumped in with the rest of the video, so you've got your home videos and other things you've encoded, and then you want to find the program you recorded last night, and it's sort of buried in the middle there, or
if you sort it
by date, you can just about find it. But also, they seem to be picking up the subtitle of the certainly in the UK on DVB-T. Now, I guess it's not a scenario they've really tested because it's not supported in the UK, but it always picks up the subtitle rather than the program title. So if you're searching for... I was searching for a comedy show called Lead Balloon, and I know I've recorded it, and I couldn't find it, and then I realised it was... I think the episode was called Hero, so it's under Hero and not Lead Balloon, so it was a bit confusing at first. So just little things like that need looking at.
Yeah, and again, this sort of gets back to the whole, you know, how the Zune software is treating your data. So to me, the logical thing to do would be, rather than having videos all lumped up into one big blob, which is essentially their approach right now, is you should have categories, and probably categories based on folders, you know, because, you know, we have our recorded TV folder, and I have, you know, a folder called, you know, like funny videos, and I have a recorder, you know, a folder for, you know, personal videos, and I would much rather see a series of folders that I could, you know, kind of quickly toggle through, you know, or arrange by date, but have it be in some sort of intelligent, kind of segmented out manner, so that if I, you know, purchase a music video from the Zune software, I don't want to see that mixed in with the TV shows I recorded, because I might only want to watch that music video once, but I want to watch the TV shows kind of right away. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of intelligence that needs to be done there. And as you mentioned on the Zune device, it just sort of lumps it all into videos. Although I thought partially that it did actually put it under a TV show for me, but maybe I'm remembering that wrong.
I think you may be right on the Zune. It's in the software. I have the kind of the issue with it, because it's all kind of lumped together.
Right. Yeah.
It's just because you tend to, with a TV show, you pick a show to put onto the Zune, whereas your music, you can't. I kind of just get everything on there. But with a TV show, I pick out what. Say I knew it recorded overnight, I put that onto the Zune to watch later in the day or whatever.
Yeah, and I think, again, it's one of the things that, just hopefully will kind of improve. I mean, one of the criticisms that some people have leveled at the new software is there's still no easy way to kind of edit the metadata to edit, edit your TV shows so that they do appear as a separate category, or you might actually record documentaries and you want that there to actually be, a documentaries tab, not a tab, but a right or left pivot on your Zune. So if you pivot right, rather than seeing music videos, you might see documentaries. And I think allowing people to organize their content makes a lot of sense, especially, as we have an 80 gig Zune, and of course the hard drive capacity will continue to expand. There's going to be people that are going to want, literally to carry dozens of TV shows with them, TV shows or movies on their Zune. And I think Microsoft needs to acknowledge that by allowing them to kind of edit and sort their content in ways that make sense to the customer.
And it's just a shame the transcoding process is pretty slow at the moment. Even on a fairly decent spec machine, I was finding kind of maybe a 50% ratio. So an hour show takes just under half an hour to transcode on a 3.2 gigahertz Pentium 4. So, it's not a spur of the moment decision to take a show with you.
No, it's not, and that actually kind of exposes a bit of a hole in the whole transcoding approach. I mean, you're right. I mean, transcoding is still, very, very slow. I'm a bit envious, at some of these transcoding, USB sticks, where they actually have like an H.264 dedicated encoder, and I mean, man, those things are fast. They're easily 5 to 8 times faster than just doing a CPU encoding. But of course, not every computer is going to have something like that, so Microsoft has to use a software, CPU brute force approach. But just as you pointed out, it's not a spur of the moment decision. So if you have an 80 gig Zune, why not put native DVR-MS support on the Zune? I mean, people say, oh well, it's a waste of space and whatever. But if you've got 80 gigs of storage, you probably don't care about using up an extra 1 or 2 gigs for your TV show. You probably do care about the, hour that it's going to take to transcode, the TV show. So I do think that Microsoft should really add native support so that if people do just want to drag and drop, you're coming home from work, you're about to head out for the night, you're going to be taking the train, you want to grab a couple TV shows, you don't have an hour to wait for it to transcode, So I think native support is something that Microsoft really needs to seriously consider.
Now, one new area that you and I can't access that looks really nice, and I've seen some US users having some fun with, is the Zune sort of social element, which with the Zune card. So what's all that about?
Well, as you kind of mentioned, it's very US centric. So unfortunately, I can't really say a whole lot about it. Now, I published a guide on Zune thoughts called the International Zune Users Guide,
which I followed.
Oh, did you? Okay. And did you find that helpful?
Yeah, I did. Well, at least I got registered and got my Zune account.
Yeah, exactly. So there's certainly limitations to it, but it's sort of the best that we can do as being non-Americans at the moment. But with the Zune card, and this is so bizarre, even though I registered my Zune card, I think you had mentioned this in an email that you sent me. I think they are doing some sort of IP filtering, because no music is showing up in my Zune card, even though I've listened to a whole bunch of stuff. So I have a Zune card, but it's blank. So Microsoft is, I'm a bit upset about this, because they're touting this, join the social thing, but it's sort of like join the social only if you're an American. And I mean, obviously they know that people are buying Zunes, outside the US, and even if they can't, join the Zune marketplace and purchase songs, they can still load up their Zune with music, and so why, you know, why stop them from sharing? Why stop them from, you know, joining the social and actually sharing their, you know, music with their friends? It just seems incredibly short-sighted to me, and I quite frankly don't understand why they would have taken that approach.
Well, it seems strange because, you know, I guess it would affect a US user. So if you lived in the US and you'd registered, and then you go and, you know, work in Canada for X amount of time or whatever, you're not going to get that upload because it seems to be, you know, blocking on the location. So it does seem quite restrictive, really, for something that's not really, you know, I can't see any problems. Or, you know, like you said, marketplace, yeah, you know, the content distribution rights aren't set up for all the different markets, which, again, is a silly sort of fake boundaries, but even so, I can see why they'd have a problem with that. But something like showing what you're playing is irrelevant where you are.
Yeah, I mean, just like you said, licensing issues are based on country, and that's unfortunately the way that, you know, the lawyers that run the world have decided to do things. But to display what someone's listening to, that's not a licensing issue. So maybe it's some sort of bizarre oversight on their part, and they'll be fixing it soon. You know, one can only hope. For people in the United States, however, the Zune card is a really interesting way of sharing their music. So again, I've only kind of, you know, fiddled with it a little bit because I can't use it myself. But essentially, it's a nice, you know, kind of flash-based little kind of user interface box that allows users to see what their friends are listening to. And then if they have, I'm pretty sure that if they have a Zune Pass account, they can actually, you know, see the song and essentially, you know, purchase the song or, you know, download the song to their Zune or, you know, basically add it to their download list. So it's a really dynamic, really fascinating way of allowing people to share music. But unfortunately, like as we've noted, it's really, really just an American thing at the moment.
It's not unlike the Xbox Live thing where it shows you, you know, the Xbox Live card is where it shows you what games you've been playing.
Yeah, exactly. It's very, very similar, but in some ways it takes it to the next level because with the Xbox Live you can see what games the person's been playing, but I don't know that. Well, I suppose on the Xbox, yeah, you could actually, you know, log in and download the trial version of that demo, but on the PC side of things, because it's just a richer experience. I mean, with a couple clicks, you know, you can listen to that album that your friend was listening to. So it definitely is a really interesting approach, but we just can't really join in the fun.
Mm-hmm. And finally, have the accessories been upgraded for all the new Zune stuff?
I haven't seen a whole lot of new accessories yet. When I was sent the new Zunes, the press kit had a new Zune dock. And that new Zune dock has interchangeable kind of face plates that allow you to dock the three different kinds of Zunes. So it has a plate for the Zune 30, the Zune 8, and the Zune 80. It has component video out, which is kind of intriguing. Unfortunately, I have not been able to get that to work, and I've run into a brick wall where I can't seem to actually verify that anyone else has actually used it. I've seen a couple reviews, but they've been using the composite. There's a new FM tuner, which I believe they're not legal to use in your country. Is that right? You can't use FM tuners?
Broadcasters,
right?
I don't know about the legality. They do sell them here, and in fact, I've got one which I use on my Zune. It's not a Zune one, but you know, it's just branded as a. In fact, I use the Zune travel kit, the original travel kit, with an FM transmitter, and I get a great experience using that.
Oh, okay. I must have been confused.
It probably is. Yeah, whether it's legal or not, I use one anyway because it works brilliantly for me.
Right. Yeah, and in terms of other accessories, I unfortunately have to kind of plead ignorance because, of course, I can't order any of the Zune accessories here where I am in Canada. They're not in stores. And unfortunately, the Zune team has not deemed it fit to send some of these other accessories to the Zune MVPs. They were very gracious in providing us with the Zune review units in advance. I'm so incredibly thankful to be able to do that. But in terms of the accessories, I haven't really seen what else is out there. And hopefully I'll be able to get my hands on some of that soon.
Well, I'm hoping at CES to go shopping for Zune stuff.
Yes, of course. I'm sure there will be a lot of international users. I'm curious, we didn't actually mention the improvements in the wireless functionality. So have you done the wireless sync or used any of the new wireless stuff?
I have actually, although my usage is, you know, when I get home, I put the Zune I haven't got a crate, I just got the USB cable, but the first thing I always do is put it on the desk in the USB cable. But I see the advantages of having the Zune, say, connected, if you could go with a component cable as well to a TV or whatever and have wireless, you know, through a cradle, have wireless syncing, and then you can use it to play, use it as an extender to play TV shows if you could, you know, get that syncing going without too much transcoding.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's really interesting, some of the options. I mean, I know that my wife, you know, every day when she kind of comes home from work or she comes home from working out, you know, her iPod and her cell phone and her pocket PC, they all kind of stay at the back door out to our garage. And, you know, it's an interesting scenario there. Now, she's not a podcast listener, but, you know, people that are, it's a really intriguing scenario to be able to say, okay, well, you know, I'm going to come home, I'm going to take my Zune, I'm going to, you know, plug it into power to recharge it. And when it's recharging, it's actually going to go out and download all of the podcasts that, you know, the Zune software had downloaded throughout the day or whatever. So there's some interesting stuff there. It still needs to be fleshed out. Like, there's still a few problems. Like, if your computer isn't logged in, the sync won't work because the Zune software doesn't run as a service. You actually have to be logged in. The software doesn't need to be running because when you start a wireless sync, it's intriguing. Your computer will actually make the little USB, you know, da-ding sound because it's doing sort of a virtual USB port thing where your Zune's actually, the Zune software thinks your Zune is connected locally even though it's connected wirelessly. So it's an interesting start. I think it's a great feature, but I think that they need to kind of, you know, flesh it out a little bit more to make it, I think, a little bit more useful for people.
I mean, I can see uses for it. Say, you know, you've got the dock and some speakers in your bedroom, so, you know, at night you want to listen to some music, you put it in the dock, you listen to your music, and in the meantime it's doing the sync, you know, it can do a sync, you know, when you're finished, listen to you, turn it off, you know, get it to sync up, let it do all the download the podcasts and whatever, you know, automatically without having to go and take it back downstairs and connect it up.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's really interesting, and I think it would be really intriguing. I just sort of had an idea. It'd be really cool if, as part of the Zune cards, people that have Zune Pass could actually push albums to each other. So if two people have a Zune Pass and one person really likes an album, they can actually kind of push that album to their friends, and then it would actually download via the Zune desktop software. And then when you do a wireless sync, you could actually, you know, essentially get new content that your friends had actually pushed to you and they want you to check out.
Yeah, that would be nice. That. It's got a lot of possibilities, and I guess the whole thing with the Zune, they seem to be at a level now where they can move forward and add new features, and hopefully, like you said, it won't take a year to get them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think, you know, it's like you mentioned, this, I mean, for me, I really perceive the second generation Zune as really being, like I said, sort of the Zune that we all wanted to be. So this is sort of like Zune 1.0 in terms of being new hardware and new software. And this is really, I think, something that the Zune team can really take ownership of, whereas their first generation product, like we said, it was someone else's software and it was someone else's hardware. Whereas this is really their own stuff. And I hope that 2008 will be a year where they really invest in their own stuff and that we see enhancements and improvements to the Zune.
And you did a great selection of videos with the Zune before, you know, that you published when the Zune stuff, when the version 2 Zune was launched. So where can we see these videos?
If you go to, I think it's actually just youtube.com/thoughtsmedia, or the easiest way to do it, honestly, is probably just to go to zoomthoughts.com, and right up at the top there, we have a link that essentially will take you into all of the videos. Or they can just go to YouTube and search for Zune Thoughts, and the videos will come up that way. So
that's great. Well, many thanks for your time today. I love talking about Zune. Zune's my favourite gadget at the moment, and I've mentioned it a few times on the show, but it's great to get a Zune MVP on to talk about it. And I hope I'm like you. I hope that the Zune success story continues and that they really do improve on what they've delivered so far, and we get to see, you know, more great features and a real alternative to the iPod.
Yeah, well, thanks, Ian. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. I am hoping that sometime in the early part of the year there's going to be a launch in Canada, and I suspect quite strongly that we'll see a European rollout happen sometime next year as well. So maybe, you know, this time next year we'll be talking about, you know, maybe a third generation Zune, or at the very least, hopefully, you know, the Zune being launched in our respective countries, and we'll have access to all these great features that people in the US do.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant. Be nice to have a supported product.
Exactly.
Well, thanks for your time. It's been great chatting, and we'll head over to zunethoughts.com.
Great. Thanks, Ian. Bye-bye.
Thanks to Jason. Now, I'm not sure what shows I'm going to have out next week. It depends on what internet access I can get. Hopefully, they'll bring you some updates on how things are going at CES, so if you keep an eye on the blog for that. I should have the next show, scheduled show, back out on Thursday the 17th, but I may have something out before then, you never know. If you're going to CES, drop me a line, ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. I'll have a couple of my books with me as well to show off, and maybe I'll give a couple of those away. So I'll see you around on the blog and the forums and the Facebook group, and I'll see you at CES. Bye. Thank you.